Welcome to episode 104 of Practical Defense, Middle School Violence. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addicks. This week, we're going to cover violence in middle schools and what your children can do to protect themselves and others. For the international folks out there, middle school is between grade school or grammar school and high school. Sometimes it's also called junior high school. It's generally for kids between 11 and 14 years old. Middle school violence was not my original topic for this week's show, but something happened recently at some local middle schools that's important to cover. It also involved my family and friends of my family, but we'll get into more into that in the main segment. I received some great feedback on video episode 102, How to Select a Martial Art, School, and Instructor. A few folks commented that it was a bit blurry, which made it kind of hard to read. The version I put up on the podcast feed was formatted for the iPod screen, so blowing it up larger to watch on your computer would stretch things in bad ways. I was really worried about the download size and wanted to keep the file size under control, especially since the video was 31 minutes long. If I do it again, I probably won't compress it as much to make the computer viewing a little bit better. I did post a full resolution version to YouTube. And in fact, if you have the bandwidth, it's also available in high definition. I had to split the video into four parts because YouTube has a 10-minute limit these days. You can find all the parts in the channel I made. And the URL for that is www.youtube.com/palladiumeducation. So stop by, check them out, give them a rating. I could use the boost of my new channel, and I certainly would appreciate it. I'll put a link in the show notes. And I'm continuing my NRA instructor certification training. I've completed the entire handgun course series, and this weekend I completed the shotgun course. And after that, all I have left is the rifle course, and I'll be certified to teach all of the civilian firearms courses that the NRA has to offer. Now, in turn, I will be offering firearms courses to the general public in 2010, as well as my Kubaton and my normal selection of defensive seminars. 2010 is shaping up to be a really busy year for me, so I won't be offering as many seminars as I did in 2009. I'm still working out my calendar, and I hope to have it posted sometime soon. I also have a little bit of bragging to do about the martial arts school where I train. The Woodland Hills Martial Arts Center has been selected as School of the Month for January 2010 by Taekwondo Times magazine. There's a two-page write-up, pages 36 and 37, and it has pictures. And the issue is on store shelves right now. What's cool is that this is also the 30-year anniversary issue of the magazine, so it's a bit of a collector's edition. And finally, I want to welcome Tony Brown to the show. Tony is a podcaster in his own right and a fellow member of the Gun Rights Radio Network. He'll be contributing an occasional 5-minute segment to the overall show. So welcome, Tony. And in fact, we'll be right back with his first contribution to Practical Defense.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony Brown. I'm the host of both Firearms Cafe and the Armed Ape Podcast. First, I'll take some time to thank Alex for inviting me on the show today. Hopefully, this will be a segment that I'll be able to do on a regular basis, and you won't get too tired of me too soon. The segments that I'll be doing for Alex will mainly be small-scale product reviews, putting kits together, things of that nature. Think of it as a quick tips episode that Alex does. Having said that, here comes a shameless plug for the Armed Ape podcast. A big part of that podcast is doing reviews, so if you would like to join me at the Armed Ape podcast, please feel free to do so. However, be warned. The Armed Ape podcast is not for the faint of heart, nor for those that are easily offended. If you'd like a more family-friendly Second Amendment-type show, my podcast Firearms Cafe may be right up your alley. Well, that's more than enough jibber-jabber about little old me. On today's segment, let's talk about something that most all of us use in one form or another on a daily basis, but that most of us don't give a second thought. And that thing is our vehicles. It doesn't matter what make, model, or year, and it doesn't matter if it's gasoline, diesel, or electric. We jump into them and we expect them to work, and for the most part they do. On later segments, we'll talk about some of the things that you may want to have, like tools and kits in the vehicle. All of us know that the cars of the 1950s, heck, even the cars of the 1990s, are very different from the cars that we drive today. Technology has made them much more reliable and safer. We also have more electronic devices that, again, make our life easier and safer. Even our tires are better. They last longer, they have better tread designs, and are made from better compounds. And this is what we'll focus on today. Specifically, can you change a tire on your car if you needed to? In the past, having a tire blow out or the tread separate was not an uncommon occurrence. It didn't happen every day, but it wasn't uncommon to hear of. However, today that's a pretty rare thing. You're much more likely to have a screw or a nail or some other type of road debris get into the tire, give you a slow leak, and when you come out of the store or get up in the morning to go to work, the tire is flat. All cars will have a jack, a type of tire iron, and a spare tire. And the questions you need to ask are, do you know where they are? Do you know how to access them? And do you know how to use those tools? Do you know where to put the jack so you can safely raise and lower the car? Is your spare tire inflated? And do you know how to get the spare tire out of the car or from under the truck? Now, we spoke earlier of technological advances, but the way a tire is held onto the vehicle has really not changed in the past 60 to 70 years. Now, some people will say, I don't really need to know this stuff. I've got AAA. And believe me, AAA is awesome, and it can get you out of a jam. But what happens if you're in an area with no cell phone reception, or you're on a deserted strip of road and there will be no help? Or if you just don't have the 1 or 2 hours that it may take for them to get to you and get you on your way? The good thing is that all this information is in your owner's manual. So your homework assignment for this month is to be able to change the tire on your own. You may ask, well, how does that tie in with personal safety or defense? If you know how to change the tire and get moving again, you're not going to be dependent on anyone else. You become more self-reliant, and you'll eliminate at least one encounter with a stranger. Even if they are from AAA, you don't know them. And what if that guy takes a shine to you or to your spouse or to your teenage daughter? Hopefully you'll decide that this is something you need to know how to do, and you will familiarize yourself with how to change the tire. In closing, I'll tell you about 4 things that will make your task easier if the need should arise. 1, have a good pair of leather work gloves. 2, have a kneeling pad. The kind that people use for gardening is fine. 3, have an old denim shirt that's a couple sizes too big. And 4, practice changing the tire. The gloves will save your hands. The pad will save your knees. The shirt will save your clothes. And the practice will save you time and money. And plus, it will give you added confidence, and it will boost your self-reliance. Well, that's going to be it for today's segment. Hope you guys got something out of it today. You may not always be able to count on somebody else, but you should always be able to count on yourself. Take care, guys, and stay safe.
Thanks, Tony, and it's great to have you on board. On Tony's show, Firearms Cafe, he's running a series on the juvenile probation system in Arizona, where actually he was a juvenile probation officer for about 15 years. And also just a word of warning, Tony's taste in music sucks. Yeah, that's right, Tony. I said it. But be certain to check out that show and his other show, The Armed Ape. Okie dokie, on to the main topic. I've been asked by several listeners over the past year or so to cover how kids and young adults can protect themselves while in school. And the age categories requested range from middle school all the way through college. And this is a really touchy subject, as there's a hypersensitivity to violence on school grounds because of all the shootings worldwide. Now, I will get to these subjects because they're really important, but I want to make certain that I have all of my research done and so I can do the topic some justice. But something happened just before the Thanksgiving holiday at 2 of my local middle schools that I am compelled to address. Now, normally I don't comment on or analyze current events because what appears in the media with all of the commentators is more often speculation based on hearsay than actual fact. Now, for example, I was flooded with requests to comment on the Mumbai attacks. The truth is that it takes years before the complete story is known about any event of this type. I felt comfortable commenting on the Columbine incident because it had been thoroughly dissected. And there was also a lot of solid information about the Virginia Tech incident, and I was able to listen to and read eyewitness accounts, so I didn't have to rely on the media as a primary source. You know, but heck, they are still figuring out the entire timeline on the Virginia Tech incident. You know, just this past Friday, the Virginia's governor released a new report that contradicted previous reports on how the school officials treated the incident as it was unfolding. And the Virginia Tech incident happened over 2 years ago. So what happened here locally to me was that on November 20th, there were a series of group attacks on red-headed children at two middle schools. My nephew attends one of these schools, and one of his Little League teammates was one of the children that was attacked. The spark that drove these attacks was reported to be a Facebook page set up back in 2007 that designated November 20th as Kick a Ginger Day. A ginger being a term used to designate people with red hair. That Facebook page was inspired by a South Park episode from 2005 called Ginger Kids. Now, for those that don't know, South Park is a very popular and very crude animated TV show. I've watched the episode, and I'm not certain you can blame the show for these incidents. Now, a quick summary here is that Cartman, you know, who's the ignorant, racist, intolerant character, starts off by making unkind remarks about redheaded people, even going so far as to say that they don't have any souls. His friends, in order to teach him a lesson, dye his hair, bleach his skin, and paint freckles on him to make him think that he's caught gingivitis, you know, the redheaded disease. So Cartman's usual extremism then mounts a campaign for the rights of redheaded people. The Facebook page, which according to one report had 20,000 members, is what named a specific day and called for actual violence against redheads. I was unable to find the original page, but there were plenty of copycat pages up there, and none of which had 20,000 members. The original page has probably been taken down by now. Reports are cropping up all over the United States about these types of attacks against people with red hair, and there are also reports of attacks at this time last year in Canada. Now, I can't go into a whole lot of detail about the incidents themselves, as not all the victims have come forward, and they're all minors, and I don't have a whole lot of reliable information. You know, details are still trickling in as the kids talk to their parents and the police uncover the truth. But here's what I do have that I believe to be good information. Now, up to this point, 8 children were attacked over the course of the day or even the days following. 5 were girls and 3 were boys. The attacks were all multiple attackers on a single victim. The smallest group of attackers was 4 and the largest was estimated at 14. Yes, 14 on 1. 8 kids are being investigated for crimes, and 3 have been arrested and released into their parents' custody. And for some reason, the attacks don't qualify as hate crimes. Now, I don't know what criteria the LAPD is using to make that determination. Now, Calabasas, where these schools are located, is an extremely affluent community, you know, on par with Beverly Hills. School officials were aware of the Kick a Ginger Day thing, but discounted it as not something that would ever happen at their school. They didn't take it seriously. Now, fortunately, none of the kids were seriously injured. The poor kid that was the recipient of the 14-on-1 attack had a lot of bruises and cuts, but was not hospitalized. The school only found out about the attack after he went to the school nurse for bandages. When you start reaching numbers of 5 attackers on 1, you're in deadly force territory. When you hit numbers of 8 or more, it's compounded by a mob mentality that significantly increases the chance of seriously bodily harm and death. The kid that survived the 14-on-1 attack with only bruises and scratches was incredibly lucky. So what can a child do if he or she is surrounded by a group intending them harm? The truth is, there's not a whole lot, but there are some things that can increase your survival. The problem is, how do you train your child for this type of incident? If you have any good ideas on what to do and how to tell them without terrifying them, please send them to me and I'll share them on a future episode. In any case, here are some basic tactics that a child should be able to grasp and hopefully remember when he or she is caught in that type of situation. Now, multiple attacker defenses are different than single or two-man attacker defense. And in fact, some of the tactics used for a single attacker will get you into serious trouble in a group situation. So here we go. First, traditional martial arts are useless in this type of attack. There is no way you can fend off individual blows from that many attackers. You're going to mostly punch and elbow your way out of the situation using flailing blows. Kicks are going to be too slow and will leave you too vulnerable. Plus, the mob will crowd in on you and you won't have room to kick. Due to the press of bodies, you do not want to lift your leg off the ground because of the risk of being knocked down. So, only quick punches and elbows. No kicks, no knees. You want to keep both of your feet on the ground. Now, to that end, you do not want to go to the ground. Do whatever you need to do to stay standing up. Curling up on the ground, which is a natural instinct, will get you seriously injured and perhaps killed. If you go down, your priority is to get up as fast as possible and at all costs. It doesn't take many head stomps to put you in a coma or cause traumatic brain injury. I've seen video of swarm attacks on kids, and one time, just the fall to the ground, the kid hit his head on the asphalt and went into a grand mal seizure. Now again, next, protect your head. Keep your hands up and close into your body. You want to protect your head from punches and being hit with objects. You want to be able to see, and you do not want to be knocked out. You want to move. Don't stand there. Move out from the middle of the crowd. But if you can, don't move through the crowd. If you move through the crowd, they can surround you and it'll be the worst case scenario. You want to move to the nearest wall and then move along the wall. The wall will limit the number of attackers that can access you to 2 or 3. And 2 or 3 is a whole lot better than 4 or 6. And finally, escape. Your focus should be on escape. You're not Bruce Lee. You're not Superman. You cannot take on 4 or 5 or more people at the same time. You will eventually lose. You want to get out of there. Do not stay and fight. Run away. Escape, escape, escape. Now, for adults, we have more advanced tactics. And we go over things on how to move with a partner and how to move with a group, but these are far more than a 12-year-old could be expected to recall. So here's another side of the situation. What if your child is not being the person attacked? What if your child is a witness to the events? What should the child do? First, and this does pain me to say, do not get involved. We would all like to think our children would stand up for the person being picked on. I was raised that way, and I intervened in bullying from grade school through college. There's nothing more I hate than a bully. I mean, seriously, I can't even watch it in movies without getting upset. I was never bullied as a child because, you know, I was always bigger than everyone else, but I could never sit back and watch one poor guy get harassed by other kids. And it still upsets me faster than anything else out there. But these types of situations, like the Kick a Ginger Day, the numbers could swell beyond just a playground pushing match and bullying in a matter of seconds. So these are closer to hate crimes and swarm attacks than a standard bullying, so it's a different situation. What may start out as a 3-on-1 could easily jump to 7 or 8-on-1. And by being well-intentioned, your child has just added himself or herself to the victim list and saved no one. So if your child's a witness to the event, he or she needs to find the nearest adult, get their attention, and get them to respond. I'm talking about the yard teacher, a cafeteria worker, anyone in the office, the janitor, or even just burst into a classroom while the class is in session. Find the first adult that child sees and get that person to respond. Do not be polite. Do not wait. Interrupt and be insistent. Use words that will get the adult's attention, like fight. I really hope your child is never involved in or sees these types of attacks in his or her lifetime. This year, it was kids with red hair. You know, next year, it could be kids wearing white shoes on the wrong day. I mean, who knows? These things are impossible to predict. Kids can be unbelievably cruel to each other. And children often don't fully understand the long-term consequences of their actions, which is why the courts treat them differently than adults. The best prevention is to be highly involved with your children and find out what's going on. What are the latest trends? What are they talking about? and then you can engage them in discussion when something like Kick a Ginger Day crops up and hopefully intervene before they get involved in something really horrific. And one of the keys is just don't discount something because you consider it irrational or inconsequential. Something that seems really stupid or unimportant to us as adults could mean the entire world to them.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
All right. In summary, in a multiple attack or mob attack, consider the following. No kicks and no knees. Keep your feet on the ground. Keep your hands up to protect your eyes and your head. Do not go to the ground. Stay on your feet at all costs. The ground could mean death. Move. Do not stand there. Move to a wall and then move along that wall to a safer place. Escape is your priority. You cannot fight these people. If you see a multiple or mob attack happening, do not get involved. Run to the nearest adult and get his or her attention. Don't be polite. Interrupt a class in session if you need to, and be insistent. And finally, be engaged with your child and learn about what's going on in their lives. As always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on TaekwondoTimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on the show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, Practical
Stay
Offense
aware, is a member of the Gun safe. Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com.